This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So I spoke to Mervyn Day, who was a scout at Brighton. I had a lot of respect to Mervyn. I tried to bring him in at Notts County, couldn't bring him in. I said, Mervyn, tell me about Grealish. I want him. I think I can get him. Is that Villa's in the youth team? He's a bit slight, but he's the kind of player that I like. He's slight, he can dribble, you know what I mean? He's courageous. Mervyn went, dude, give me 2 minutes, let me go into my file. He said, Chris, take him.
Yeah, so you moved to Arsenal January 95, just as I remember, a couple of days before we beat Liverpool 1-0 at Anfield, because I can remember having some Liverpool fans chanting, "Where's your kibom, you're gone," to me on a train. So George Graham signed you, but then a month later he's gone, isn't he?
Yeah, there'd been something that had gone on at the club previously, which, you know, that George felt his job was going to be safe. You know, results were up and down at the time, and it was a transition time for the club, but, you know, and then, you know, lo and behold, you know, George was gone. I really liked him as a manager. What a manager, you know, basically a disciplinarian, but really, you know, his detail to attention, you know, attention to detail, sorry, was so good in the team meetings before games. He would talk to you, the size of the fullback, where his movements were, how to, you know, who's gonna flag in the game, why he's going to flag, how you're going to beat this. You knew the game plan. You knew the game plan. You just had to go out and execute it. But then he was gone, and then Bruce Rioch came in. I won't lie, I didn't really see eye to eye with Bruce, you know. And I think that year, really, that was a really important year for me, really, because it was a year where I felt I should have been given opportunities, and it just didn't happen. So that was disappointing. But then Arsene came in, and he was just like a total breath of fresh air, you know. Although I didn't play with him, I was involved with the squads on a lot of the days and a lot of times. I learned so much, especially with the players that he ended up bringing in. It was just an unbelievable. You go from being at Ipswich to, like, you know, 3 years later or 2 years later, you know, 2.5, 3 years later, you're seeing Patrick Vieira come in, Dennis Bergkamp, Mark Overmars, Emmanuel Petit. You know, you're just seeing all these players coming, Nicholas Anelka. You know, it's just all these players, and you're seeing the training, how they train, what they eat, how they live. Just changed all influence again. And I remember speaking to players at Manchester United and even at Chelsea, and they were saying that when Zola came in, what he brought to was Frank Lampard, Eric Cantona, what he brought to Manchester United. You know what I mean? Really, just really total, like the professionalism, how they trained, you know, what they did in training, how they tried to control games. You know, it's not helter skelter, you know, keep the ball, go all the way up there and come all the way back. Just opened your mind a little bit. So if I had my opportunity again, would I go to Arsenal? Absolutely. It's a special club, you know, really good club, you know, but I learned so much, obviously, being with the players and being under the managers there, you know, that I ended up being under.
So when Arsene Wenger came in, I remember there was a headline, wasn't there? Arsene who? So what was it like in the dressing room? Because big figures in that dressing room, Tony Adams, Ian Wright, Paul Merson. Yeah. What are they saying in the dressing room about this French fella that they didn't know very much about?
Well, Tony had, you know, Tony was quite close to Mr. Peter Hillwood, who was the chairman, and David Dean at the time. And I remember Tony coming in and going, we're going from this French guy who was over in Japan. He's like, what? Are you joking? He's like, yeah, seriously, you know, they're going to bring this. And I remember him coming in, and the first day he took training, did a fart leg, and then everybody had to grab a mat. We had all of these, and he started doing these stretches, you know, doing these stretches. So he was taking the whole, and that's the thing with Arsene, he was a bit of a control freak. Everything had to be done properly, but it was done, you know, everything was brilliant. You know, timings. He'd be out on the pitch setting up the mannequins and things. If training started at 10:30, he'd be out there at 9:30, organising everything. But it was really good. You could see the professionalism in him, and he changed the whole mentality. And the players, like, you know, the older players at the time, you know, these Steve Bowles, Lee Dixon, Nigel Winterburns, they all got another two or three seasons out of the game more, you know, due to his regime.
And then... then obviously you didn't get to play. You
no.
What did he say to you? I mean, did he say that you were going to get an opportunity at some point?
Yeah, he did. Listen, we fell out a couple of times because he's saying, you know, your chance is going to come. You've got to be patient. And then those opportunities weren't coming. So, you know, in the end, I had the opportunity to go over to France. He said, look, you know, you've got an opportunity to go over to France. A different culture. You like it over there. And, you know, I ended up going over to Le Havre and really enjoyed it. Although I was injured quite a bit, wasn't used to the double sessions and the trainings and all that lot. Really enjoyed the food, enjoyed the culture, enjoyed the football. And it was a learning. I always wanted to play abroad anyway and have a taste of what it'd be like, you know, to play abroad. And I really enjoyed that, you know, playing with Le Havre. Le Havre is a team which I realised at the time, they had this little building where there was all these players. And every morning, around about 8 o'clock, they'd be training. Then you see them at like 12:30 train. And then you see them at like 6 o'clock train. So sometimes they were training three times a day. And they had these schools where players were actually living in these little dormitories and then going to school and then training. And this is why they were, you know, in the 90s, they were technically so good, the French. You could always see that they can handle the ball because they were, the touches of the ball they were getting at the time was unbelievable. Over the years, yeah, and even now, you know, Mahrez, who's at Manchester City, he came from Le Havre. Paul Pogba came from Le Havre. Dimitri Payet came from Le Havre. You know, all these players that have been, and even previous players, like Talak, who went to Liverpool, I believe, you know, they came from Le Havre, and that's what they are. They were like the old West Ham. West Ham brought up through Carrick and all these players. They were similar in there. But they used to go scout all the... In Paris, there's only one team. Well, there's two teams. There's Paris Saint-Germain and Paris FC. But where do all the other players, you know, on the suburbs of Paris, there's millions of players, so where do they go? So that's what Le Havre used to target. And they used to target all the players around the suburbs of Paris and try, you know, get them out of these areas and bring them to Le Havre, which is about an hour and a half away, and then put them in dormitories and make them, they call it making them good citizens, help them to speak English and give them a way of life and an opportunity in football, which was, back in the 90s, was something really, really special that they really adapted and conquered, really.
Interesting. And I think Le Havre wanted to sign you permanently. But then you moved to Malaysia.
Yeah, I didn't really. Listen, I love Le Havre. It was in Normandy, you know, but it was like, you know, I was like 26, 27. I'm thinking, this is not what I see myself in my prime. And, you know, maybe if I was like at 30, you might want to try go and do all that. And just, I was, you know, at the time I was going to have my first boy, Jordan. So, you know, like, I was like, nah, I don't want to do that. They wanted to sign, and Arsenal were a little bit upset that I didn't want to do the deal because they'd agreed a fee and everything. But then I came back and an opportunity came. Tony Cotty had been playing over in Selangor in Malaysia, which is a big team. The Red Giants, they were called over there. You know, we used to get average get of 30-odd thousand. And then basically, you know, I didn't want to go. They offered, you know, two or three times. And then I ended up going over there, having a really wonderful time, really good 6 months, and ended up scoring the winning goal in the final in front of, I don't know, 70,000 fans, which is one of my three best memories, that would be one of them, you know. So, you know, these ventures came along in my life and it was like, don't know. And then when I get there, really embrace the culture and embrace the football and probably end up doing something which I would never have thought I would have done. but really enjoyed it because even now, you know, my goal over there is played on the TV. I still speak to friends over there. My brother-in-law was over there like a few years ago and said he was watching the TV and the goal came on in a bar in Malaysia. What's the chances of that? So just all good memories.
That sounds fantastic. And so did you think about staying there longer term?
Once again, you know, the Premier League at this time is getting better and better. And, you know, I remember doing TV over there, you know, doing the Premier League and commentating and just, you know, planning to try and get back, you know, just get back to England as well. You do miss, you know, the football once you're away, you know, because obviously the level is not as good. And although you're a star in that country, you still want to get back there. So, no, at the end of the day, you know, I mentioned about staying there, but I was being respectful because they paid a lot of money for me to go over there and looked after me really well, you know, put me on a house and a golf course and things like that. So they did go out of their way, but, you know, I wanted to come back to England.
Mm. And QPR, with whom you scored pretty much every time you faced Ipswich, I think.
There's a little one in there where I think I came out to QPR and Rayafa, God bless him, was the manager at the time. And he was a good footballing manager. He'd been a Blackburn manager, and he was good. But then he resigned. It was supposed to go to Vinnie Jones, but he was doing lock stock. So there was all these dynamics coming in. And then Jerry Francis came back in, who was a QPR legend. And he was a good manager, good defensive manager, really based on defence. Not great for attackers, but great. You know, great, and did really well with the team. Did really well we managed to, you know, stay up on the last day of the season when I scored a hat trick against Crystal Palace. Another good memory, you know. And then we had a good season the next season. But just like at QPR, just like at Ipswich towards the end, there was no money coming in. No money. And then they got in debt, administrators came in, and everything just went bellied up there. But I enjoy my time at Queen's Park Rangers. Very similar to Ipswich, very family-fied club. You know, over in West London, with good people who used to run the club, you know. And like you say, I scored a couple of times against Ipswich, but that was all because I used to have a bet with Richard Wright. He used to say I wouldn't score. And then, so he owed me a couple of 50 quids, you know what I mean?
So you had a short spell in Denmark, didn't you? And the leg injury ends your career, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was at Aalborg. I went to Aalborg, which was when I went to speak to Billy Davis, but he was at Motherwell up in Scotland. But I just fancied, you know, coming towards the end of my career, I fancied something like, again, you know, to go abroad. And I ended up saying, okay, why not? And it was really enjoyable at the time. But I had a leg injury when I was over there, and it was just plaguing me. And I wasn't fully fit. For the first 6 or 7 weeks, I wasn't fully fit. And then I remember 9/11 came in, and then just traveling became just disastrous. You know, something that was supposed to take, you know, 2-3 hours, ended up taking 7 and 8 hours, you know what I mean? So it was just, I was away from the family at the time. So, and my leg wasn't great. So I just thought at the end of the day, I'd just call it a day. You know, I look back through the period and all the managers and all the teams that you did, you've got great memories, but that's the hardest thing when you come towards the end. You know, how do you let go? And do you let go on your terms? You know what I mean? It's like, you know, you still believe you can go on, especially when you haven't had many injuries. But, you know, the body's, you know, some part of your body be saying, no, it's finito. And you just got to try and, you know, listen to your head and go, okay, yeah, it's the right time.
So you've been, what, 33, something like that about then?
Yeah, a little bit less than that, 32, yeah, 32, 31.
So you're then thinking, what should I do next?
Like every footballer does.
And had you had thoughts of coaching?
No, not really. I'd always, John Lyle would always say to me all this information, because I used to watch videos with John. We used to talk about football. I remember him saying to me, oh my dear, I've watched this player at Milan. He's 17 years old. His feet are like that, left back. His name's Maldini. He said he's unbelievable. He does this, he does that. And we would constantly talk football. You know, he could just see, he could do, if I got across the near post and finished one, open up my groin, he said, could he take it early with your outside of your right foot? So he would just improvise. Another story, I remember getting Richard Wright, I think it was Richard Wright, was a young goalkeeper coming through his switch. And he goes, you keep on getting 1v1s with the goalkeeper. Goes, always remember, goalkeepers come out and slide at your feet. So he said, for the next 20, 30 balls, I want you to just dink it over the goalkeeper. Just dink it. and he kept me rolling me through. Dinked it. So I scored one against Sheffield Wednesday. They got it. Sheffield Wednesday's a dink over the goalkeeper, down to John. Scored one against Wigan in the cup, down to John Lyle. Scored my first goal for Arsenal against Nottingham Forest, dink over the goalkeeper, down to John Lyle. And that's what I kind of learned from, you know, that's why he was such a great coach, because he could put you in situations and give, talk from his experience, his 50 years or whatever, how many 100 years he'd had in football. But the sign of any player is how much you can take on board. And you know, if I'm telling the same thing 4 months later, it's not working. So when John would give me something, I'd go, John, boom, got it. Now it's gone to page two, got it. Let's go to page three. And he could always challenge. They used to, you know, you talked about Bobby Ferguson being a hard taskmaster. He was. Charlie Woods was similar. You know, Charlie and but they would come in, and Charlie would come in after the game and say to me, I don't see you get across defenders and head it at that near post. I'm telling you, I don't see you do it. I don't see you do it. I don't see you do it at the far post. I don't see you do it at the near post. That was a challenge. So we played against Hull. The ball comes across. Malcolm Shotton was one of the biggest, strongest centre-halves. I get across him and boom, in the Hull 3-3. You should have that on video there, Rich, somewhere. I get across, boom, near post. What do I do? Monday morning, Charlie, what's going on? I thought you said I didn't do it. There you go. One of the best stories I can tell you, and I'm getting into my storytelling, is I remember being in the changing room talking to the players, and I had lots of twos at Ipswich. Never had the three, never had the hat tricks enough. And I remember John saying to me, look, you're talking a good game, Lionel. You're talking a good game. You need to go out there and prove that you can do it. You'd always get into the wall, but never going through the wall. I was like, okay. So he then, and he kind of had a little pop of me again in front of the players. And that's how it was. He was challenging me. So we played against Wigan in the cup. What happens? I get the hat trick. Now, I think Ron Atkinson was at the game. He's in the office with him. And as he's talking, I knock on the door after the game. I open up the door. I just bounce the ball. I let him go in and I shut the door and I walk off. and the ball bounces up to his desk and he goes, he's done me. So, you know, those were the challenges that they were always constantly kind of, you know, putting them in. And, you know, people respond differently, eh? You know, you can't shout at some players. You know what I mean? Because, you know, you're going to lose them. Mm. Players, you need to dig out in front of everybody, you know, because you might be a leader and you're not leading. So John would never really dig me out in front of everybody. But in the 1v1s, he'd let me have it. He'd let me have it. And I'd sit there going, yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. Yeah. And then I'd go, right, I've got to go. I've got to get back on the horse and go again. But really good, you know, really good, you know, really good mentors and really good, you know, really good people. And it's sad that we lose him in the game. He was so good that when I used to go to his house sometimes, he used to say, I just got off the phone to Fergie. And I used to go, yeah, all right. Yeah, whatever. And then when he passed away, God, you know, Fergie came down and did his eulogy. Mm. It was unbelievable. And then in his book, I think it's in his book, Leading, he said, when he first came down to Manchester United and he was struggling, he phoned one person, John Lyle, asking him for advice. That's how much, you know, Fergie thought of him, you know, because he knew, you know, John was an experienced manager who knew the game. So all the things that, you know, these guys, and these are the coaches of old, eh? The old school coaches that were really great.
So you go into your own coaching days at Arsenal, with Arsenal under 14s. Obviously, John Lyle, one of the sort of figures that who you presumably tried to emulate. So how did you end up at Arsenal?
Yeah, I wouldn't say emulate, John. You know, he just used to say to me, look, I've given you so much coaching advice and you've got so much better. What are you going to give back? Are you going to give anything back? And I used to go, yeah, I'm going to go back to Bradford. I'm going to give back to all my people back up north and enjoy life. And he was like, you've got to give back to the game. You know, you've taken so much out. You've learned so much. You've grown. Your personality has grown. Your knowledge has grown. So I was down at Arsenal watching one of the games and I was doing my badges at the time. I was over at Watford helping out with the under-16s with Mark Warburton. Was a good, you know, really good coach then at the time, was Mark. And then I was at Arsenal watching one of the games, and Liam Brady was the academy manager at Arsenal. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm doing my badges. Liam, he says, well, why don't you come be part of the family again? So I went back to Arsenal and started helping with the 14s. I think at the time, in the 16s, they had Jack Wilshere, and, you know, all these young players, Chuck Saniki, all the good, you know, good young players that were beginning to come through, you know what I mean, come through the ranks there. So I ended up coaching them. And from then, Jim McGilton, who was doing our badges, and Jim asked me to come to the Ipswich, which was really, you know, listen, asking me to come back to Ipswich was like a dream, you know. I really enjoyed working for Jim as well. Passionate guy. Another guy that really wasn't given the time at Ipswich, you know. They didn't have a lot of money, did they? And he was beginning to just bleed and get into a style. But that transitional period came with Marcus. And then it just didn't work out.
Mm. What about Roy? Because obviously Roy came in after Jim. How did you get? You were one of the few people to stay on, weren't you, under
like,
Roy?
Yeah, I like Roy. Really good manager and really built a good team. Big personality, you know, and obviously Roy would look back and maybe one or two things that he did wrong, but I don't think the chief, you know, the chief executive wasn't great with him, lost in players. But I always know that he created a really good team. We had Ryan Ledbetter and, you know, Damon Delaney, all these players. If you look at that team, there was just the striker situation where, one, we drew too many games, but two, he just couldn't, you know, we couldn't finish teams off. We didn't have that striker, and when he brought in Priskin, the dynamics weren't right with himself and Priskin. But I thought he created a good team. I'm surprised he hasn't gone back in as a manager, but I think he's loving the punditry at the moment. But I think he's one of those guys, really, that, you know, he would have learned. He worked under Martin O'Neill for a little while. But you've got to remember, who people talk about Roy Keane, who were his two managers?
Cluffy.
And Fergie. Yeah. Two of the best. So those guys have got high standards. And although Roy's, you know, he's got his own high standards as well, because he's a winner, I think he would have learned a lot. And it'd be interesting to see if he gets back into it. One more shot at it, because I'm sure he'd do well. But I enjoyed working for him. His professionalism was unbelievable. You know, meetings at 8 o'clock, you know, so organising everything. But I think sometimes as well it's hard. You know, I've been around big personalities in changing rooms. You know, a lot of the guys at Ipswich hadn't been around a big, you know, were around Roy, so they were nervous. There was only one or two that weren't really nervous. People like John Walters, you know, wasn't really that bothered, you know.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
So you left under... And did you have much with Marcus Evans while...
Yeah. Marcus used to come into the club, and I thought he was really, you know, listen, his heart was in the right place. He wanted to do well for Ipswich, and, you know, he invested money, you know, but it didn't go great. You know, he brought in Mick. Mick did a good job. I was surprised in the end, you know, but... You know, because Mick left, and it was like, you know, there's a fraction of the fans that got against him. But I think in football, you know, every manager has a lifespan at a club. you know, be it 4 years, 5, 6 years, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, you need to either change the whole players or you have to go, really, you know, I mean, you've got to change the dynamics. But Marcus was good. His eye was in the right place. The only two things that ever bothered me, and this is just my personal opinion, is one, who was advising him? He never had any, you know, Terry Butcher, somebody sitting on the board who knew the dynamics of the football club, you know, and that. And secondly, the chief executives that he was bringing in was just, didn't know the DNA of the club. You know, they're putting a scarf, they're sitting in the director's box, and that, you know what I mean? And it began to be like business-wise. You know, I remember people that have worked in the centre spot for 30 years were being let go, not even a bunch of flowers. You know what I mean? Worked at the club for 30, 40 years. And I remember one of them saying to me, Chris, I was down here when you was here in 86, and I just got called in saying, oh, you know, they're letting me go. Not even a bunch of flowers and a box of chocolates for them. And I just thought, you know, that's what I'm saying. You know, the club, when I joined it in 86, they would go down to, you know, Sir Pat's house in pre-season, and the whole club would come together, and, you know what I mean? It'd be the whole, your partners and, you know, the washerwoman would be there, you know, Chrissy and all the old lot. In the end, I think when Marcus came in, he stopped the whole lot of it and just made it corporate. You know, had a corporate, so nothing for the family, for the club again. You know what I mean? Just those little things. Now, I know it's a business, football's a business, but you can't go away from that family element, because that's what makes the club. That's what makes the club. So, yeah. So, no, I quite like Marcus. I worried about who was getting, you know, who was giving him the advice on managers, who was giving him advice on season ticket sales. I think one time they put season ticket sales up for OAPs, and, you know, it's crazy. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, what you're doing, you know, what's you thinking about it? You know what I mean? This is not like a club in the city. This is Ipswich. You know what I mean? They're a family fight club. Look after the supporters. I think the people that have got in there now are trying to do the right thing, aren't they? You know, they try to put the DNA back into Ipswich. So hopefully that can keep that going.
Rich, to kind of bring us up to date.
Yeah. Well, so from coaching it at Ipswich on to initially coaching at Notts County under Keith Curl, and then the main gig, Chris, talk to us about that transition and, you know, how challenging that might have been.
Yeah, I left Ipswich, you know, obviously Paul Jewell came in and, you know, and the dynamics wasn't right. So they wanted to go down a different direction, which was no problem. So I ended up coming out of the game, and then Keith Curl got the opportunity at Notts County and wanted to bring me in as the under 23 coach. They didn't have a team. They wanted to develop a team and put a team together and, you know, and saw me as the way moving forward doing that. So I was quite happy to do that. I moved up to Nottingham, lovely city, and ended up doing that. Keith did really well, you know, did really well in his first year. I think we finished, where it was, 12. But, you know, started putting some players together and, you know, they were doing really well. But then they had a few bad results and they sacked Keith and then asked me to take over as caretaker manager. The first game was against Stevenage. I come out of the tunnel and within, what, I don't know, 40 seconds, I sat down, we're 1-0 down. So it's like, welcome to League One. We actually managed to play really well in the game. We, you know, we dominated the game but couldn't score, which was always, you know, always a sign of a team, really. You know, which just goes to show you need to almost keep them at one end but score at the other end. But then after that, we went on a run about 8 or 9 games unbeaten. And went and, you know, really won against Crewe and beat some other teams, really. Tranmere did really well. So we ended up, they offered me the job, you know, on a 3-year deal, which I took. So, you know, that was good. But, you know, I helped the team. We finished 12th that season. There was a lot of players out of contract. I need to change players, bring players in. And they cut the budget by a third. So they said, look, we want to go down the youth product way. We want to try bringing good young players and, you know, want you to develop players, go out and mold the club how you see it, which is exactly what I wanted. I said, listen, if you want to do it that way, I'm your man, but if you want to, you know, go down a different route, I won't want to do it. No, we're well behind you. We know it's going to be difficult because we're cutting the budget by a third. And I was like, okay, then no problem. So I did the deal and, you know, signed a contract. And my first thought was, right, I need to get some good youngsters in. You know, some good the level, the youngsters that we had there at the time and we were just building weren't good enough to go into play first team football. So I started speaking to players, and I think any coach will tell you in the game, or any manager will tell you in the game, you know, your contacts who you can speak to people about is really important. I'd seen a young guy at Aston Villa when I was at Ipswich doing the 23s. I'd seen him and I'd known about him, and he wasn't far from. See, that's another thing, because we're living in Nottingham, in the middle of the country, so it's really good for, you know, getting teams in the right areas, you know, around the Midlands and even in the north of Manchester, even in the northeast and northwest. So there was a guy called Jack Grealish that I'd seen a few times. So I spoke to Mervyn Day, who was a scout at Brighton. I had a lot of respect to Mervyn. I tried to bring him in at Notts County, couldn't bring him in. I said, Mervyn, tell me about Grealish. I want him. I think I can get him. He's at Villa, he's in the youth team. He's a bit slight, but he's the kind of player that I like. He's slight, he can dribble, you know what I mean? He's courageous. Mervyn went, dude, give me 2 minutes. Let me go into my file. He said, Chris, take him. Take him. I ended up getting Jack Grealish for £900. He was at Aston Villa in the youth team. I got him in on loan. Came in and obviously played his first game against MK Dons. He came on. Second game against Cham, he was unbelievable. Body swerve, taking the ball, receiving the ball. And you could just see he was going to be something. And his shin pads was the same as they are now. Just rolled down, rolled down. But I remember when I signed him, and the chief executive at the time, Notts County, he didn't want to take him. What's he going to do? What's this kid going to do for us? I went, listen, he's better than what we got. And I think he can, you know, moving forward, I think he's going to be a good player. But I think he's going to excite the fans, what we got. Well, and it was only Ray Chu, who was the thing, who sat in with me in the room on the Wednesday night saying, what do you want? I said, I need this player. I want this player. He said, I said, 900 quid. I said, he's on more there. But, you know, he says, do you want it? I went, yeah, get it done. So Grealish came in. I actually brought in Callum McGregor as well a month earlier, you know, from Celtic, speaking to Neil Lennon. Again, he hadn't played a first team game. He came in. He was a revelation. I think he had 12 goals by Christmas, the Callum McGregor. So I was building a team here. I was telling you there, I was on with Grealish. So I get him in the office. I said, look, listen, you know, I'm bringing you in. I think you can do this. I want you to dribble in these areas. And, you know, I'm trying to build a stomach. Yeah, all right. Just kept on nodding. And then so you got any questions? He went, no, I'm all right, Gaffer. You know what I mean? What time are we training? And as he walks out, he turns around, he says, who are we playing on Saturday, by the way, Gaffer? He's like, you know, he was so laid back. That was him, you know what I mean? I was like, yeah, we've got MK Dons or whatever. And he was like, okay, cheers. And off he went. And he's never looked back, you know. But I was trying to build a team, which was who it was. But like I say, you need 2 or 3 transfer windows. We were probably too small. But we, you know, recruitment is the most important part in football, one of the most important part. And to have recruitment, you need good people working for you, and people who know a player, who know what you look for, you know, and who know the leagues. They know the levels of the leagues.
And presumably, Grealish's success with Villa. Obviously, I was fortunate enough to see him quite early on at Villa, and you knew he was going to get kicked and you knew he was going to get attention, but he's developed his game so much. He's a much cleverer player and obviously now playing for England and Man City. Could you see that? Was that what was the attributes that you kind of saw, or did you see those attributes early on?
Yeah, listen, he could dribble the ball. It was like Gazza, how Gazza could dribble. He had the ball and he had this body swerve with the hips. I remember he was, you know, a lot of teams would try to kick him early on when he received the ball on the halfway line. I used to say to him, look, listen, one, can you get maybe, you know, towards, dribble more, closer to the goal, so we can get free kicks where we can, rather than on the halfway line, release it a little bit early. But when you get in the final third, now do it, because now we can get set pieces. And also just, he was always a giver. You know what I mean? He gets as much enjoyment out as in finding a pass. And I just thought at the time, you need to get goals. You've got to start getting double figures, you know, getting shots off. You know what I mean? Because you could see he had this confidence in him, but he just seemed to, you know, he'd be more happier, you know, getting an assist, which is good. But sometimes, you know, you need these goals, because if that guy was not a good finisher, you could still be creating. And it's not, you know what I mean? You're not getting anything from it. So you need to try and get, you know, those components when you've got your 10 or 12 assists, but you've got your 10 or 12 goals as well. Now people are going, oh, wow, you've got a creator and a goal scorer. But listen, he was always going to be a good player. He was just one player that, you know, I thought I was, you know, I believed in youth. I wanted to go down the path of bringing youth players in. And Callum, you know, and Callum McGregor and Jack Grealish were two. If you was to say to me, look, in X amount of years, they'd be playing England, Scotland in the Euros, and they'd be playing against each other. They're playing now in League One. People are going, nah, no chance. But they're going to be two really good, influential players for their countries.
Yeah.
Or Jack is great. He's getting along there to being influential for the country, yeah.
Exactly right. Well, talking about internationals and representing your countries, let's bring things right up to date with British Virgin Islands. And, you know, my reflection, having listened to you, Chris, and talk about your career and, you know, working under, you know, John Lyle and George Graham and Arsene Wenger and, you know, your philosophy about youth and so on and giving back. It's interesting, the kid from Bradford who's gone via Ipswich and London and Denmark and Malaysia and France, now coaching British Virgin Islands. But that's football, I guess. If you give back, as you said, these opportunities come and you've got an opportunity to create a legacy, I guess.
I think, listen, that's a really good question, because I was lying back the other day, and, you know, your journey in life, you look back at it, and opportunities, I think it was, funny enough, it was David Platt, someone said to me once when I was at Arsenal, you know, everybody gets opportunities, eh? Some people don't realise it's an opportunity. You just stumble across it. Other people, you know, will go, no, I'll get another one. You know, while the other one go, no, let me grasp it now. And I just think, you know what, you know, when I look back some of the times, I think, you know, opportunities came, and I wasn't a shrinking violet. I wasn't, oh, I'm not quite sure. You've got to embrace the challenge, eh? It's going to be difficult sometimes, but that's when you find out, you know, your character builds, you know, you've got experience. So if people say, you know, I just did a course during lockdown, the certificate in football management with UEFA. So it was a business course. The hardest thing I've ever done. Hardest thing I had to do. You know, I had to get the assignments in on, you know, the modules in on time. The assignments had to be finished. But it was about strategic planning, you know, sponsorship, marketing. You know what I mean? So there's so many different things to it that I would like. It was out of my comfort zone. But at the end of the day, you know, the biggest, when I passed it and I went over to, you know, Neon in Switzerland to get the certificate, and we had 4 days though, I got so much fulfillment from it. You know, it was the hardest thing, but it was the tip I can go say, no, I got through it. I got through it. Did I enjoy it at the time? No. Mm-hmm. Did I enjoy it when I was getting the certificate? Absolutely, yeah. You know what I mean? Absolutely. And that's what it's about. At the end of the day, you cannot go, well, you know, so if people say to me, what was lockdown for you? Did a lot of walking. But you know what? I got through this course, which was the hardest thing that I'd ever done. You know, you leave home at 16, you don't really pick up a pen again, apart from when you sign a contract, you know? So, you know, I really enjoyed that. And, you know, I did my UEFA Pro license in 2010 with the English FA, with Gianfranco Zola and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and you know, Neil Redfern and other good coaches at the time. It was so good at the time. And, you know, that's where you look back, you kind of go, yeah, the journey's been, it's been difficult at times, but everyone's been a good experience, you know, in some way or the other. But you got to keep on pushing and trying to go forward. What would I like to do more going forward? Maybe I have another shot at being a manager, you know, of a league team, because I think you learn a lot from your first one, and you learn a lot from your mistakes. And I think equal opportunities is getting better, because it has been true, you know, it has been difficult, you know, for, you know, black coaches to get the opportunities. And even, I think, obviously, Kieran was at Ipswich for a little while, and in the end, he's obviously had to go away for health reasons. But, you know, did he get the opportunities that he deserved? I don't know. I think I spoke with him, and he was a little bit disappointed on one or two things. But, you know, you got to keep going. You know what I mean? Sometimes when he's not, you know, it's easy to go, oh, you know, that's not working out because of this and that. No. Take away all the excuses. Get your qualifications. You know, get your experience, and then just, you know, try putting yourself in a position to get the opportunity.
And some different challenges as an international coach, you know, those contacts you talked about, and it's not necessarily recruitment as recruitment, it's kind of, but it, finding the players is probably a key thing for you as an international coach.
Yeah, the British Virgin Islands job is so challenging, but, you know, look, there's only 30,000 on the islands, you know, right. But, you know, so I've got to try and find, recruit players. The players at the moment playing the local league, which is, the standard is not great. You know, the players in England that play for us are playing in the lower tiers of the football pyramid. You know, and, you know, there's hardly any professionals, so it's hard. But, you know, we played two games the other day against the Cayman Islands in the Nations League and got back-to-back draws. First time it's been done. So there was progress there. But my job is to go into the Americas and to try find players in the MLS, which I don't think there is any. In the league below it, the USL, and then in the colleges. And then just to try give them. But once again, international football is different from club football. I've got them for 7 days sometimes. You know, you can't coach a player in 7 days, so you've got to try and how much they can take on board, you know, the fitness levels. There's all these different things. So, but it's something that I really enjoy, you know, really enjoy doing. You know, can I get any players or grandparents or parents that have been in the BVI, lived in the BVI for more than 5 or 6 years and have got family and heritage down there? But it's something that I enjoy. I was coaching over there the other day and I was like, wow, look at this. It's so much beautiful around there. It's beautiful. You've got all these hills. You've got Virgin Gorda. And I'm going, Chris, it could be worse. I could be in Bradford. Back in my old towns in the Arndale Centre, just sat around doing nothing. So, you know, I quite enjoy what I do and I embrace the challenge to try and make players better. I think that's the thing, you know, going back to John again, that's the one thing he says, you know, if I can make you better, if I can make everybody 10% better, you know, can I make... You know, can I go to the BVI and give more professionalism? Can I help the coaches? Can I, you know, can I educate the players on diet, on strength and conditioning? You know, strength and conditioning is a massive part of the game now. You know, injury prevention. We didn't do half of these programs when I was growing up and it began to come in a little bit towards the end of the career. But, you know, all these things that they don't have over there, you know, trying to get goals, you know, onto the island is so hard. You can't just
order physical goals, you mean?
Yeah, physical, you know, movable goals.
Yeah.
You know, because you've got to order them from America or from England. It might take 3 months to get over there, and, you know, so, or 4 months. So there's all these little things that we're trying to put in place. We ordered some mannequins the other day because I love the mannequins. It took 4 months for them to get there. Yeah. So, you know, you're having a couple of camps. We know mannequins, but, you know, that's just helping with the technical side of the game and things like that. So that's my, you know, to leave some sort of legacy there that they've got better and getting back-to-back draws against the, you know, in the Nations League recently is a step in the right direction. But now we've got to build on that.
Yeah, exciting times. And talking of exciting times, we've talked about the change of ownership at Ipswich Town. Let's finish on Kieran McKenna. Have you had a chance to see Ipswich under Kieran yet? And what's your thoughts for the upcoming season?
Yeah, I saw a couple of games last season, but I work on Saturdays, so a lot of the time I do with the Premier League. But everything I've seen is so positive. I think, you know, I've been speaking to players that and ex-players that have been around the club. The players want to play for him, and, you know, that's a good thing. And, you know, I don't see him, you know, getting too excited when we're winning or when we're losing, which is great. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, towards the end of the signing, short signs, he got a system in there. But I think this season, you know, we should be in the top six, you know, always around there and hopefully put a run together, you know, maybe to try go up in the automatic places. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy. And I always think, you know, you need 2 or 3 windows to get where you want to get to. But I think if we, you know, if we give this guy, you know, 18 months, 2 years, he's going to get us where we want to get to, which is promotion. You know, once we get promotion and, you know, into the Championship, now it's about building foundations and making that run. Because as you can see from Nottingham Forest, obviously, you know, anybody can, you know, once you get the dynamics right, you can make that run and get into the promised land, which is the Premier League. But everything I see at the moment with the young players that he's trying to add to the team, and especially how they're trying to play, is really positive. I'll be down there this season with my scarf and hopefully seeing a lot of victories.
Fingers crossed. Chris, that's great. Phil, anything we've missed?
We've covered an enormous amount of ground, haven't we?
Yeah.
Plenty there. Well, Chris, thank you so much for talking us through that. You know, as football fans, it's sometimes very, we don't get the opportunities to say thank you. So thank you, obviously, for your time as, you know, player and the coach, the goals, the dancing, the lilac suits, the memories for us as Ipswich fans, and all the very best for you in British Virgin Islands for the getting up those FIFA rankings.
It's the promotion run-in. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much-needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.